Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Neon flickers as they flock through the town. New clothes, old friends, out till the end. They'll dance and prowl, but first they congregate in the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Oh, Dan, hello, how are you, Dan?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. How are you?
Looking about our breath, what have you up to?
Just ran here from the old Correct Realm windmill.
The windmill?
You've been up to the windmill?
Not today, but obviously most days.
Oh, you go? Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's the first time I've been up.
How else did you get your flour?
Well, I just rely on the shops.
Oh, okay. No,
generally.
No. I grow my own wheat here.
I didn't think it was working. I went up there. There was no one there. It was quite ghostly.
John will be off by now, isn't he? The windmillist.
Yeah. The windmillist?
The windmillist, yeah. And his flowermonger friend.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so that's nice. Good. Yeah. Anything else you've been up to?
No, that was it. Up to the windmill and back. That was my daily. And I like to do a daily walk before I come. And
to the windmill?
Get drunk at the pub.
I'm surprised I've never seen you going to the windmill every day independently.
No, not always to the windmill.
You were brilliant last night, because I say, Dan.
Was I?
Yeah, that open mic night, you were the absolute star of it. And I did not know you wrote songs so well. that haunting love song you sung was absolutely wonderful. I wonder if you could just give us the chorus now, because it was beautiful. And you have such a lovely singing voice as well. Like, you were really going for it, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Was I?
Yeah. Because you were. I thought, oh, Dan, I'd probably just mumble it or something like that. But no, you were really belting it out.
I'd had a couple of drinks.
Espresso martinis, I'd heard.
I had a couple of espresso martinis.
Yeah.
What was it? The one about
Caroline?
The
one that you met when you were 16 or something. The first line was Caroline. I met her when I was 16, as I recall.
Yes.
Of the chorus.
So it was...
go on, go for it.
Caroline, I met you when I was 16. And I felt like I was 18. And you really mean so much to me. Yeah, that was the chorus.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, the second bit of the chorus will rhyme with something as well. Yeah. Like, they won't just stop.
Oh, you know. There's no rules in...
No, there's no rules in songwriting, is there? Speaking of music, who's that in the distance there, windsurfing across the lake?
He's very good at it.
He's very good. Look at the pace he's going at.
Great
he's getting
form.
Off, coming through in his wetsuit. Is that a cooler shake of front, man? Crispian Mills, I think it is. Crispian, how are you?
Hello, gentlemen.
Unbelievable. How was your journey here through the realms?
It wasn't actually I wasn't windsurfing. That was a magic carpet.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I couldn't see. I've not got my glasses on.
Because I've got the sun behind me.
That will be.
But this is a wetsuit.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. We don't get many people in wetsuits in the pub, do we?
Not really, no. Yeah. Surprising, because the only way to get here is by lake.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no car park. We should get one of those fitted. Really, at some point in the future. We're here to talk pubs, Christian. Are you a man who enjoys a pub?
The pub enjoys me. I'm delighted to be here and delighted to be part of a pub culture that's based completely and entirely on fantasy.
Yes.
As well, but, you know. My relationship with pubs has been forged over a long period of time, but always, you know, the basis of it has always been playing in them. Hmm. And some of those experiences have been amazing, and some of them have been sort of quite dangerous.
Was your first gig as a band in a pub?
Gig was in a pub. Yeah, yeah. Like personally, I played in a pub in Kingston called the Grey Horse.
Okay.
And I went on stage just to play one number with a guy called Chris Thompson, who was the singer in Man for Man's Earth Band.
Right.
And he invited me up to play, you know, I would think I was 14 or something. He let me play one song, but Changes by Buddy Miles. And I just stared at my feet. Not because I was a cool shoegazer, but just I was terrified. pubs and playing in pubs, that I've got a lot of memories.
Did you go to pubs as a child at all with family or anything like that? Or were you...
Yeah, I was talking to my missus about this, actually. A lot of memories of the 70s sitting in the pub garden drinking, you know, lemonade, you know, freezing, whilst there's all this rowdy laughter coming from a very warm, cosy pub where the grown-ups are having a ball and you're allowed to sit in the garden.
Yeah, we were discussing this because I've vague memories in the 80s of going to pubs but only being allowed in the garden. Was that generally the rule back then for kids?
I seem to remember the beer garden.
Yeah.
all these sort of orphans sitting around with blue noses, red noses.
Very occasionally a sort of rusty climbing frame would be there.
Yeah.
But that would be unusual. Yeah.
My first experience of ghosts of the paranormal was in a pub because I lived in a place called Norwood Green, which is in between Southall and Hounslow.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought, you know, basically England was essentially Punjabi, so I kind of it was inevitable that Kulashekar was going to happen if I look back. But actually, my first paranormal experience was at a pub. I think it was called the Plough on the corner of Norwood Green. And all the kids were lined up, you know, in the beer garden, which backed onto a canal. And so while the parents were all having a rave around their pints, all the kids were out sort of skimming stones and everything. I remember I was about 5 or 6, and I just remember getting pushed in by nobody, just by some ghost. There was nobody around me. And, of course, I got in trouble, like, oh, you were, you know, accident prone, which was my little label when I was a kid. You know, I was always breaking things and hurting myself. But you know, I swore to this day, I'm still trying to persuade you guys.
I believe you. I was
pushed in.
So what did it feel like? Just like a shove?
There was no one there, and I suddenly somebody was right behind me, and then I was in the water. Maybe I just haven't cracked the case yet, but I do remember, you know, staggering home, cold and covered in sort of slime. The canal in Southall's not great.
Pretty mean ghost to be bullying a 5-year-old.
Yeah, I know.
That's something better to do with their lives.
Your own size.
Afterlives.
You're wasting your afterlife. So when you've played around the country, what pub venues have you particularly enjoyed those days?
Well, I do remember when I was, for the first time I was trying to just make some money, you know, Alonza, because I was at college with Alonza, that's where we met before we made Kulashekar together. And I was 16, he was 17. And we said, we loved folk music, you know. And we said, we could go and get a gig at the Grey Horse because they're in an Irish pub. They're always having folk music. So I went. And I played there with a band obviously, through this where with Manfred Mann. Mm. And I said to the landlord, can we get a gig here playing folk music? We'll just sit in the corner. And he went, yeah, all right, I'll give you 30 quid and beer. So we said, oh, brilliant. So we went and set up in this Irish pub and we were playing folk music, what we thought was folk music, which was a lot of 60s folk music.
Right.
And it wasn't really working. And some guy came over to me and he had braces on and he had boots and he just was your classic Irish guy who's about to push your head through a wall. And he just said, this isn't Irish music. This is hippie music. And we're like, okay. Now, in the folders and files of my mind, I did remember this Furies album that I had heard when I was a kid. And it had songs like, you know, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside? And I was like, Alonzo, follow me. And we just waded through the Furies album. We played every song on that album. Like, it was like the Blues Brothers.
I was just going to say, it sounds exactly like the scene of the Blues Brothers. Yeah.
Anyway, we survived. We didn't die. There was a moment there I thought, I'm going to die here in this Irish pub.
What a place to go. Cool. Yeah. Then you can start wanting five-year-olds. Yeah.
And we played in, Kulishaka played every gig we could get. You know, and the sad thing is a lot of, for bands, since, you know, piped music, that the live music scene became harder and harder for bands to be able to play and make money. So, and then there was this racket in the 80s called pay to play.
Yeah.
Where you would get a gig and they'd give you a load of tickets and you'd have to basically get people to buy tickets and essentially you'd end up paying to have your own show. So that was hard. And then, but once we had some support, we had an agent and we got a record deal, we just were playing every pub in England. I remember Greenock being particularly exciting on a Friday, Saturday night. Greenock, like, you know, like those wusses in Glasgow.
Yeah.
They'd never go to Greenock.
No. Yeah.
And I think the gig that we kept playing in London that eventually got us a lot of attention was called The Splash Club, and that was at the Water Rat in King's Cross, which is not far from here. Yeah. It was very small. And then I went back there a few years later to sort of, you know, after we'd become, you know, sort of a successful band and invited some friends the stage was so small that the monitor would have to sit on at least beer crates. So you'd have to make a bit more space. And in the middle of the show, one of the monitors fell off and this skinny girl all in black with like sleeveless black t-shirts and dyed black hair, and she's wrestling getting this monitor back on the beer crate. And oh wow, she's pretty cool, she's pretty tough. And I looked down and it was Chrissy Hynde. She's like, somebody take control of this gig. And I remember thinking that was a beautiful moment. Yeah, she was pretty cool.
There's some brilliant music venues in London, but I've just come from Tottenham Court Road and I've got the Elizabeth line, the newest train line here. And I got on that whenever I get that technical ride, I always think, back of my head, I think, oh, this would be so convenient when I used to live in London to get to London Astoria. Then I remember they destroyed London Astoria to build the train line, so kind of ruined. Yeah. so that's moot. Crispian, before we get on to your drink choices, Dan, would you like to explain your bell?
Yes. Well, it's bell, Crispian. Oh, yeah. And when it goes off, it means that one of your choices is going to materialise on the bar in front of us here.
So, does a bell go off?
It go off when it rings.
Okay.
Yeah. Rings. A better word, wouldn't it? It's weird for me, but you know, sort of last night, what a great lyricist I am.
Yeah,
I would get that wrong. Yeah,
get that, yeah.
Yeah, so just be aware of that.
First of all, you get two choices of drinks on draft. What's your first choice going to be?
Well, look, my first choice has to be, it's not my favourite beer, but the associations of this beer are very deep for me, which is Carlsberg.
Okay.
Beer. Now, apart from the wonderful Orson Welles advert that, you know, you grow up with, you know, brainwashed, you know, you will like this beer, you will think it's amazing, you know, with probably the best lager in the world or beer in the world. When my granddad made a film in the 1950s called Ice Cold and Alex, which is all about like a little troop of soldiers trying to get across the Sahara. And, you know, one of the things that's keeping them going, they're in this truck and, you know, it's against the odds, against nature, you know, and there's mines and there's, you know, the heat and all sorts of things. And one of their party is a German spy, of course. And, you know, they have this experience. And one of the things he says to keep them going is, when we get to Alexandria, I'm going to buy us a nice cold beer in this so-and-so's bar. And so it kind of like they're meditating on it. And this is they finally make it. And they work out who the spy is. They work it out, but they let him have his beer anyway before he goes. And so I'd watched this movie, and it all climaxes. The climax of the movie is a guy goes and has a pint.
Yeah.
And he sits at the bar, and he's crossed the desert, and he stares, and had this one shot where all the beers are poured one by one down the bar, and he's just staring at this beer, and he's just savoring this moment, letting the condensation drip down the side, and then he picks it up and he downs it in one. And it's a fantastic moment in cinema, in British cinema especially. And then it was used in an advert, I think, you know, by Carlsberg later.
They just used the scene as their advert.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, as I became sort of drinking conscious, I asked him about it. And he said that when he turned up at Shepperton or Pinewood, where it was, to film that scene, they said, "Look, can we have a word with you, John? Because there's an issue with this." Technically, he went, what's the problem? He said, well, we've tried lemonade and shandy and ginger beer and everything, and it just doesn't look real, and we can't get the froth. And he said, well, I'm a massive fan of the real thing, so I don't have a problem with it at all. Let's do it, you know. So they shot with real beer. And so the first shot, the main shot, where you see everybody at the bar, that is done with real beer. And then they said, got it in the can, brilliant. He necks it in one.
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, well, now we're going to go for the mid shot. And then he did that again. They said, okay, now we're going to go for the close up. And I think they did 15 shots.
Can't imagine they cut together that well, the first and the 15th.
And he had to go, you know, sit in his trailer at lunchtime and have a good sleep. But he said it was the best day's work he's ever done in his life.
That's fabulous. What a lovely story. Oh,
Thank you.
It's a slightly late bell because you know, I had a chat with the mystical pub.
Yeah.
And they said, bell, we wanted you to tell that story first.
Right.
Because that is what they've chosen to bring is Carlsberg.
Well, we never know when the rounds will materialise. They can materialise at random sort of thing.
And there it is.
I'm afraid it's cans rather than bottles as it is in the movie.
Wonderful. You don't have to drink this Christmas. You can take it away with you if you want.
We need 15 for it to be authentic.
Yeah. I certainly won't be downing it in one, but I will have a little.
I mean, if you wanted to do a sip and a little...
Yeah, you need to hear it, really, don't you?
Yeah. Maybe a little recreation of the...
The can's been redesigned since I've last seen a Carlsberg can.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Is that picking it up on the macro?
Yeah. Oh. Well, and what was the line? It was worth waiting for.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Well, that's a cheers to him.
Cheers.
Cheers to Grandad.
Carlsberg. What do you know about Carlsberg, Dan?
Well, most of the stuff that I was going to chat about was stuff that Crispian said, because I thought we'd focus on that. But I saw your grandfather tell that story to on Gloria Hunniford's show. It's like a fantastic story.
Well, the thing is about when old actors are, or they're just walking sort of anecdote artillery, you know, and they collect them. And they, as long as you still find it amusing and entertaining, you can keep saying the same joke. I've heard him say jokes, you know, to so many different audiences, but he still thought it was funny. And so it always felt fresh to him, you know, and to the audience. He was brilliant.
Is there a story from your career that you find yourself telling all the time? I'm not going to ask you to read it now, but is there one?
I've definitely got to an age where I feel like I've only got four stories and I keep telling them. I talk to, you know, even the guys in my band. I say, if I've told this story already, then say. I think it's really important. You keep having adventures, you know, you've got to keep pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and being uncomfortable and being stressed because that's really where all the stories happen, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
You stop.
You never, no stories ever start saying, I decided to stay in and sat on my sofa and then, yeah. Does it? It's always out having adventures.
Sylvia Sims was in the film with your grandfather, with Sir John, and she talked about how actually it was a really difficult shoot when they were shooting in the desert. It was really tough, and she sort of said, I suppose, it's a story where she says, I suppose they would have called it method acting, but we didn't know what that was in those days. We just called it getting on with it.
Yes.
And she said she didn't earn a great deal from the film. It was sort of £30 a day, but when it was made into an advert, which was actually a response from Carlsberg, because Holston Pills. Do you remember these Holston Pills ads that Griff Rhys-Jones used to do? And at the end, it would say, a Holston Pills production. And they would take old movies and make them into an ad. And they'd been doing that. And I think they used something from Ice Cold and Alex. And so that's why Carlsberg had the idea. So they didn't do anything except for the whole advert was the scene that you perfectly described.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he just says, worth waiting for. And then that's it, just says Carlsberg. That's it. It's sort of this beautiful response. But she said she earned much more off the ad than she did off the making the film, which is interesting.
Yeah, they had that. They had a really good attitude. I think I don't know what it's like right now, but for a long time, British actors had a really good reputation for just getting on with it. You know, it's a famous. Story, isn't there? Sir Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman making Marathon Man, and he's like, you know, Dustin Hoffman's like getting himself hyperventilating, ready for this scene, and just before the cameras roll, Larry says, "Why don't you just act?"
Fantastic. Well, Carlsberg gets in. Are you a fan of a Carlsberg, Dan?
I am. Don't drink it very often, actually, but it's quite enjoying that.
Absolutely fine.
Very good. It's like a Danish lager.
Yeah.
Like a Tuborg.
Is that Danish?
Yeah.
Oh, good knowledge. What's your second choice on drafts?
Well, because it's a fantasy pub, you know, I thought what needs to come into the world is some kind of pint of ayahuasca. Because, you know, the moon underwater, something sort of somnambulant about that idea, isn't it? Like, it's we're all asleep, we're all in a dream. And this ayahuasca thing, I haven't taken it, I just want you to know, but until tonight.
Until now.
But,
I thought the bell might ring.
Oh, I wish. No, it would. It's a phenomenon, you know. Like in the 60s, everyone was taking LSD, and have you taken it? Oh, well, I know so and so's taken it. And then, you know, you had the same thing with MDMA, and now you know, everyone is taking ayahuasca, and there's a lot of like, have you taken it? Oh, no, so and so, my doctor's taken it. And this strange, unexpected people have, you know, experimented with it. And I think a lot of, the story of it seems to be something to do with like waking up from a dream, you know. And I always thought that the pub, it can be a place of sleep. It can be a place of sort of bringing your consciousness down and blotting things out. But it can also be a place of conversation and of ideas that sort of snap you out of some kind of pattern or way of looking at things. So, yeah, I think ayahuasca would certainly, you know, shake things up a bit. I mean, back in the days of the Wild West, you'd have spittoons, right? Everyone was fine like that. So like sort of vomit buckets.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to just sort of get out of the old paradigm, the old way of thinking, and just go with it.
Are we going to have it in as a sort of beer type drink, or is it going to be in a cocktail? Or...
You look a bit nervous.
I'm just curious. I just want to make sure that the bar staff correctly serve it.
I think it should be a pint.
Okay.
That, you know, apparently, that, you know, it's, there's a whole kind of scene which Jay Hammond Organ Darlington was explaining to me, you know, that there's sort of enzymes that you have to take this certain vine leaf to stop the enzymes in your stomach breaking down the DMT, and there's these different types of active natural chemicals. So you have to get the balance just right, which is why you need to have a shaman. So I think you need shaman on the staff.
Okay, that's fine. So, yeah.
Definitely.
Will they have to double up on the other jobs? Are you a bouncer and shaman at the same time?
Shaman slash bouncer.
Your name's not coming in, but if you do come in, you have a safe and pleasant journey.
Very original skill set.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. What do we know about it, Dan?
Well, I didn't know very much at all. So, you know, I did a small amount of research on it. You know, it's traditionally used by indigenous cultures in the Amazon and the South America, where it originally came from. But now it seems it might have therapeutic potential. It might help people with substance abuse. So it feels, I don't know much about this, so I might be wrong, but it feels like it's still in, as you said, with sort of drugs and things in the 60s, it's still in the early stages of development of people experimenting and people got theories and people are using it, and
it's not a pharmaceutical drug. It's not, you know, something that you can say is legal or illegal, because it's a natural remedy and it gets used in these therapeutic settings. But yeah, like PTSD and just generally like breaking out of a pattern of a mindset, you know, or, you know, that may be created from trauma, it would be, you know, alcoholism or whatever, you know, like, I'm going to the pub to heal my alcoholism, all right? There's a shaman there.
Yeah. Got ayahuasca on tap.
Yeah. He also delivers kegs to other people. Yeah. Many jobs. It does seem to be a sort of popularity with psychedelics in general a lot now, that amongst sort of tech people in San Francisco and stuff like that you were
the irony. Forefront. Sorry, I just looked at the camera there when you said tech. No, it's not that I'm paranoid. My fears are real. It's the irony, isn't it, that, you know, like in the 60s, that it was like, you know, turn on, tune in and drop out, and now it's like take a little bit of LSD and go to work for the man, because it'll help you be more productive. It's bizarre. But it's happening, yeah. Microdosing is a thing, and the ayahuasca. Somebody gave us some ayahuasca when we were recording an album called Strange Folk, and we were actually staying in Paulie, our drummer's family's bungalow, somewhere on the Quantox, and they were moving out, and it was empty, so we had chucked all our gear and we had a Hammond in the old bedroom and stuff, and it was quite a scene. And somebody in Glastonbury had given Paul a load of ayahuasca and it had been brought to the house, and Paul hid it. He hid it because he thought, you know, I hid it from your dog, just gonna trash the session, and, you know, we're not gonna get any work done. And so that was the moment that we would have done it, you know, but it didn't happen. So
are you keen to try?
I think it's definitely one of those things, like, it's got to come to you.
Yeah.
I believe in that sense. You've got to go with the rhythms of life and not force those kind of moments. If I just happen to find myself in a fantasy pub with a shaman on a full moon.
Fabulous. Wonderful. Excellent. You spent a lot of time on the road touring. How have you and the rest of the band dealt with drinking on there? Because I know some bands approach it by, the Cribs, and they're saying they would drink before every show. Some people don't drink at all when they're touring. How do you approach it? And how's it changed?
Never drink.
Never.
Never drink before a show, but afterwards. No. But I remember I did have a conversation when I was quite young with Dave Gilmour about this, and the whole psychedelic scene, you know, which they were right in the middle of in the eye of the storm in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, everybody was tripping, And were the band tripping as well? And he was like, no, we were totally straight and we were in control of what was happening. I mean, we, you know, in control in the sense that we were really conscious and tuned in. They weren't like the Grateful Dead where everyone's like, wow, I'm in your body playing your instrument right now. Where are you? If I'm there, where... It wasn't like that. And so I think there are two schools, you know, like you get really, really, really high and then you're one with the audience, or you're more kind of like, but we got a little bit tiddly once at the Hacienda right early on in our career, and we played a rubbish show. I mean, it wasn't a disaster, but we felt sloppy and we just said, we're never, ever going to do that again. And also because the vibe's really important, and it's not really, you know, it, for us, you've got to be sensitive to the vibe, and you've got to be on your toes. So, but it is hard. A lot of bands, you know, they have a massive spike of adrenaline, and then they have to go to bed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's when it becomes a problem for people. They just become dependent on pushing that adrenaline down, and it gets messy. But We've traditionally been more sort of into herbals. Mm. And once Val Kilmer came to our gig in Paris once, right? And we were really impressed that Val Kilmer had appeared, and he'd been fasting for a long time. So he was really off his head. You know, when he'd come to the show and he was all sort of spaced out, and he came backstage and we were all drinking tea. And it was a weird scene. I think he was expecting it to be a little bit more rock and roll. There was a lot of tea. There was a lot of tea going on that night.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I've noticed from hanging out with bands, people think of it being very rock and roll. There's a lot of drinking hot drinks, whether it's just for voice and stuff, and there's also a lot of sitting around between sound checking and things. There's a lot of people just sort of sat there, like, doing... Very little notice.
Well, you do get offered a lot of. Yeah. I mean, we played a couple of years ago. We had a few years ago. We played in Limerick, and it was a pretty grotty dressing room, let's say, and it looked like someone had sex in there and then been murdered. It was not a good scene. And it looked like the neighborhood, everyone had just vacated the neighborhood as well. It was one of those moments of, should we really be here? Sorry, this sounds like I'm really down on the Irish at the moment. I'm not. We were very excited to be playing Ireland. We hadn't been there a while. And obviously, because the band's all vegetarian, so we're quite, you know, we've got to keep eating all the time. And the promoter just brought in a crate of booze, just a crate of Guinness. And we were like, where's the hummus? He went, this is your rider, enjoy. And I said, but this should be hummus, right? And a kettle. He said, no, this is all most bands want. Isn't this good enough? you got to be careful you don't fall into the trap. Yeah, yeah. It is easy to just trash the tour.
I did it. For a different podcast I do last year, we played in Dublin, and there they were, the crowd there, they were so into boozing. Stevie I was with just opened a can at some point, and they all started singing, "We like to drink with Stevie," and made him down this drink. And after he had that, he thought, well, I want to have another drink. So he just opened another one, and then it would start again. He said, no, I'm drinking about 5 pints during the thing. He seemed all right with it, but not for me. Yeah.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You get bottles and cans as choices as well here. What's your first choice?
Well, my first choice for a bottle is Chimay Bleu. Chimay Bleu.
Okay.
Now, the Chimay range, I am not an aficionado on any beer, honestly, but Chimay I know about because our bass player, Alonso, he lives in Belgium. He's very near Chimay, the town that make this famous beer, very famous in Belgium. And it's made in a monastery. It's made by Trappist monks. So, you know, we're joking about having a shaman, or are we?
Yeah.
Now, I think we need a Trappist monk on site.
There's room for both shaman and Trappist monks in this.
Making Chimay Bleu. Now, Chimay, you can get Chimay Blonde.
Yep.
Chimay Rouge, I think, and Chimay Bleu. Now, you'd think it might be sort of like traffic lights, of like words of warning, because it is very strong stuff. And my kids are homeschooled, and one of them, the oldest boy, needed some extra science tuition. And we found the right science tutor who was nearby, and we found him through the Scouts, actually. And he wanted to be paid in beer. Seriously, he wanted to be paid in beer. So I went to record.
Is that what you wanted, a tutor?
Yeah. I was fine with it.
Yeah.
He said, I'll tell you what, pay me in beer. So the deal was, so I went to record at the studio in Belgium near Chimay, and I brought back a crate of Chimay Bleu, and I left it at his house. And he called me up and he said, that is the best and the strongest beer wow. I've ever had in my life. And you have to have it in a chalice, like a giant brandy glass. And it's a little bit syrupy. It's sort of, I guess, on the edge of what you might call like a sort of special brew.
It's chocolatey, I think they. Is it? Chocolatey with a bit of mocha, I think they prefer to.
That's what they say about special brew as well.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, spicy, candied fruit finish.
How strong is it?
9%.
There's a bar, the local pub where Alonso lives. You know, it's a tiny village. And we went down the pub at lunch when we were in the studio once. And stupidly, recklessly had a beer at lunchtime, and that was it. The rest of the day was just let's go to bed, let's go to bed and just sleep this one off. It's very strong and it's very good. And now you know why the monks can't be bothered to speak. It's like
they do great strong beers, Belgium, don't they? I mean, I remember a few years ago. Well, it would have been 6 years ago, because I went with my son when he was three, my eldest son when he was three. I went, got in the habit of taking one of the kids away on the third birthday, just around then, for a little, just one-on-one time sort of thing. And we went to Bruges. We'd go out for dinner and stuff like that. And then I thought, actually, I'll get one beer and just have one something there. And I don't know what it was, but it was so. Well, that's quite strong.
I'm allowed to be a child anymore. Yeah.
When we first went to Belgium, the band, we were all sort of making jokes about how, what is Belgium really? I mean, it's just been created. Was it just created out, like most countries are ultimately, they're created out of thin air. Somebody says, yeah, there's a map, and they just sort of draw a boundary, and everyone shakes on it, and then suddenly let's be really patriotic. So we were not sure what Belgium was, but actually it's become beautiful parts, and then the Walloon, it sounds like a place from sort of Mad People, and it is the French speaking part of Belgium. It's all from medieval villages and people drinking Chimay Bleu, you know, it is quite a trip. And it really influenced our album Pilgrim's Progress, because we went down there and we just went full on sort of folky, psychedelic folk. And it, maybe part of it was to do with Chimay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, very eclectic three drinks so
far. It's a great lineup. This year. We've got not just the drinks though, we've got Shaman, we've got monks, we've got everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone catered to whatever your drinking habits and beliefs. What's your second choice on Bottle or Can?
Well, I've just gone for something with quinine in it.
Okay.
Because I think we're going to need it. Because I think that this bar is located in a sort of tropical climate. Oh, nice. So it's good to have a bit of tonic water, a bit of quinine. Yeah. You just want to...
Yeah.
You need to sort of slap.
First person who's chosen to locate their bar in a malaria ridden zone. I mean, it worked, but that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Any particular quinine based tonic, presumably?
No. I think it should be whatever we can get a good deal on. Just
fabulous. What's the, what do you know about tonic water, Dan?
Well, it's, it did start as a sort of a treatment for malaria, didn't it? That's when it was first used, and then these days it's a bit more sweetened.
Right.
Obviously it's used in cocktails.
Yeah.
But the English, the British used it a lot in India for medicinal reasons. Yeah.
Does it still have quinine in it now?
I think maybe a little, but not as much. I think, and it's sort of, it's more sweetened now, but I think there is still some in there now.
Yes, how do we get people to take quinine? You know, how do we get the British to keep taking their medicine? Well, just put it anyway, so they imbibe it through their booze.
Yeah.
And they'll definitely...
It sounds like a version of sort of an anti-vax conspiracy theory from the olden days, doesn't it? Sort of quinine-y thing.
Well, the quinine causes it to fluoresce under ultraviolet light. So I think that is right. I don't know what
fluoresce means.
So as in, you sort of, I think you might have probably seen it if you've been in a club or something and you've had a gin and tonic and there's a bit of fluorescent light.
Yeah.
And you sort of see that slight purpley thing, like if you're wearing white or something.
I've seen that in gin and tonics.
That's the quinine.
All right.
Yeah.
Every day is a school day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrific.
Okay, phones away. Put a gag on Siri. It's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
Crispian, do you enjoy a pub quiz?
I'm going to make an admission here. I've never done a pub quiz.
Well, that is slightly for you about to change.
Okay.
Dan, what have you got?
Yeah, well, I won't. Like, I'm a bit nervous about this one, Crispian. Nice. In some capacity, you know, it'll be very obtuse sometimes. I will relate it to the person that we're talking to. Okay, and for you, I had this. I thought K is a really important letter for Cooler Shaker. It's the name of albums. It appears on your. That's the first letter of the band. You know, there's a lot of K's around if you start looking there. Yeah. And I thought, we could do a little Bob Holness blockbusters thing, as in which K is. And I thought we might do that.
Yeah.
I suggested that to producer Matt, who's now staring at me while I tell this story. And he said, I'll tell you what we should do. We should do something about cooler. I was like, what do you mean? He said, you know, what things are cooler than others? Like, I was like, what, like average temperatures? And he's like, yeah. So that's the quiz. It's about average temperatures around the world.
Would you have rather have had a quiz about K's or a quiz about...
Yes, I thought we were going to have a quiz about numerology and esoteric meaning of letters.
Yeah.
But no, that's just fine. Yeah. We can do average temperatures.
Average temperatures. Wonderful. So the idea is that you need to tell me which is cooler. Okay. So the first question. I'm gonna give you a series of questions. Have a think. Mm.
I don't know either. I will also be competing in this quiz or enjoying the quiz.
And we will come back in the second half of the show and you can give answers and we'll reveal the answers.
Nice.
Okay. So I'll run through these now. So, which is the cooler average temperature? Melbourne in June or Montreal in September?
Melbourne. First one. Melbourne in June. Okay, so that's the southern hemisphere.
Have a think. Don't give us your answer.
Okay.
We'll come back. Right. We'll come back to it.
Okay. And I'll forget it.
London in July or La Paz, Mexico in April? Bratislava, Slovakia. Have you just been there?
I've been to Slovakia, but not Bratislava.
Okay. In January or Boston, Massachusetts in January? Honolulu in America or Harare in in December? Or Harare, Zimbabwe in May? Yeah. And a final question. Yeah. Tokyo's average daily temperature in August is 26.4 degrees Celsius. There are only 3 months of the year that have a cooler average temperature than that in Mumbai, India. But can you name them?
Why is just one of the questions different to all the others?
Just for a bit of excitement.
Thank God I'm on ayahuasca.
I might need a little bit myself, actually, Crispy. Okay, there's absolutely no point in you giving those in advance because I can't remember any of the questions, but we'll do them in the second half of the podcast because it's time to leave those of you who don't support the Moon Underwater on Patreon. But if you'd like to subscribe, head to moonunderpod.com and sign up to get ad-free extended episodes a day early, a monthly bonus podcast, access to Moon Underwater Social Club on Facebook, and early access to live tickets. We'll see you soon in part two. We'll continue creating this wonderful pub.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.